Tom Mikitas. We spoke to him yesterday. He's a professor at DePaul, terrorism expert. And all right, so Tom, here's what I know right now. What Iran is saying, they have struck back. They have struck a base in Qatar. If I'm saying that wrong, I'm sorry. But I found this to be interesting. Iran is saying their National Security Council released a statement claiming the number of missiles fired at Qatar was equal to the number of bombs the U.S. used in its strike on Saturday, signaling a desire to de-escalate. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's absolutely true. The other thing they did was they apparently gave advance notice. So this is maybe the proverbial shot for honor's sake. There were no casualties, according to the Pentagon, that we know of. And you know, I'm hoping cooler heads prevail. The problem is the two wild cards are the president and Netanyahu. The Iranians don't make any distinction between us and Israel, and Israel's continuing to pound them. Hopefully, the president's advisors can restrain him, saying, look, this was a pinprick attack. It doesn't require a sledgehammer response. But we'll see. There's no way to know.
And how is there any way to judge how much damage has been done? Because according to President Trump, annihilation, they're all destroyed.
Oh, well, the president loves superlatives. You know, heaped on superlatives. This was the greatest attack ever. It was completely successful. Nobody else could have done it. The fact that the Israelis are continuing to hit the site suggests to me they didn't get it completely. And there's no sure way to know unless you can get in there and do a damage assessment. You know, and that would require a ceasefire. You can't be sure. And the Iranians said they moved the nuclear material out before the attacks even occurred. So there's a lot of unknowns. There's no question they've been severely weakened. How much will become clear in the weeks, months, and years ahead.
Well, to the untrained minds, I know a lot of young people that are panicking a little bit, thinking that, you know, first of all, Donald Trump says he's going to wait a couple of weeks. But to be perfectly honest with you, why would you stick to your schedule? I mean, don't you want to surprise people with something? Why would you say exactly in 2 weeks? So,
well, you never said two exactly. You said within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But as I've said a couple of times, I mean, you know, the Japanese did the same thing on December 7, 1941, and we call it a day of infamy. Hey, you were negotiating with us, and then you pulled this sneak attack. It's clear now, there was an article in the Times this morning, that this was nothing but a feint. He had decided already, that's what the indications are, that he was going to strike, and this was part of the deception. You know, but to do that when negotiations were underway, I mean, they were, you know, the Iranians have said, well, you're going to come back to the table. The Iranians said we never left. They had been meeting in Geneva just as before the Israeli attack. They had a scheduled meeting with Steve Witkoff, and the Israelis attacked and cut the knees out from under him. You know, this thing is driven very heavily by domestic politics in both countries. You know, not denying that I'm no fan of the Iranian regime, but on the other hand, this I think was not necessary.
Okay, so in the chess game, the pawns have moved forward and they're now facing each other. What's next? What's the next move, do you think?
Well, I'm hoping everybody will accept some variety of a draw, face-saving thing that allows them to move forward. And, you know, as I said, Iran has telegraphed its move. It's kept them restrained. If we can get Israel to just stop the bombing now, it is possible we can get everybody moving toward a resolution. But the reality is, even if you do that, they've stored up an awful lot of bitterness. And, that, you know, in a couple of years, I think we'll be right back where we started and dealing with the same problem.
Do you see problems in the Middle East ever completely coming to an end?
All of this goes back indirectly to a single issue, and that is the Palestinian problem in Israel itself. Do you resolve that? Do you get a lasting solution? You can expect to have, you know, you're going to have long periods of tension intermittently, with these kinds of violent confrontations. You know, and I That's a lot of what it comes back to. Yes, there are issues between Iran and Saudi Arabia. There are longstanding historical problems. I think all of them are resolvable if there's real engagement to solve that one issue. And the U.S. has got to put pressure on Israel for that to happen. And I don't see that occurring. So.
And what any updates on what's going on in Gaza as we speak?
Well, the conditions are horrific. I mean, you know, people are going to be dying of disease and hunger-related issues and so on. I mean, this is, you know, they're taking a sledgehammer to the place. You know, no one defends what Hamas did on October 7th, but the response is way over the top. And again, you know, you're creating the next generation of extremists. What would any of us do if our children were killed in a bombing attack? I mean, you know, or if our parents were. I mean, you know, you'd want to get even. But until we break this cycle of, you know, of revenge, don't look for anything to get better.
Have there been other presidents that have decided to, it wasn't an act of war, but attacking the sites? Have other presidents just decided, hey, yeah, let's do it? I thought Congress had to approve some of this stuff.
That, you know, of all the arguments being made against the president, that's the one that's most problematic, because the Vietnam War was never declared. I mean, yeah, you had the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and so on, but the reality is presidents in the post-World War II era in these low-intensity conflicts have acted without the permission of Congress. You know, and both parties to some degree have done it. You know, and as a result, you know, this is what we're dealing with. It's not a healthy situation, but I don't see anybody in Congress standing up to him and saying enough and no, we're not going to approve this. So that's, you know, that's kind of a moot point. I think he's, and as long as the, you know, military obeys him, there's not much to be done about it, unfortunately.
This is probably not fair to throw to you with under a minute left, but what do we tell young kids that are worried? What do we say?
You know what? Look, here's what I can tell you is good news and bad news. Yes, we will suffer a terrorist attack at some point, probably overseas, possibly here as well. But the odds of any individual becoming a victim are very, very slim. If you look at actuarial tables, you've got a better chance of being eaten by a bear in Yellowstone Park than being a victim of terror. So put on sunscreen, wear a seatbelt, don't drink and drive, and go about your life. Be aware of your surroundings if you're in a group, but beyond that, you know, you don't take yourself hostage to fear.
See, the human Prozac, ladies and gentlemen, he always makes us feel a little bit better. I really commend you on that. DePaul,
I try.
You do a great job. DePaul, Professor Tom Makaitis, you can follow him on Twitter. What's the best, what's your handle there?
It's at Twitter or Blue Sky, at Dr. Makaitis.
Thank you so much. All right, peace.
Sure thing, anytime.
Oh, like talking to him, he really does make me feel better.